Hey y'all, hey, welcome back to another episode of the Why Don't We Talk About This podcast. I'm your host, Paula McMillan Perez, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist. On today's episode, we have the amazing Dr. Olympia O'Neill White, and she is speaking candidly with us about the connection she made during her own reproductive journey to closing the gap through research and education for emerging social workers. Here we go. Yes, yes, yes. My name is Dr. Olympia O'Neill White. I am the owner and creative writer, founder of Through My Lens Consulting Services, LLC. Through My Lens Consulting Services focuses on supporting social workers and other human service professionals be the best they can be, achieve their dreams, their vision, my pleasure. And I do that really through education. I want to empower the next generation of social workers. I'm also a military social worker, a clinician, researcher, and I am a infertility warrior and PCOS advocate, reproductive healthcare advocate. So this will be fun.
No, definitely. And y'all, like, I need to clearly do some work with you because my elevator pitch is not on point like that. Like the way you were just able to like, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is how I work with the community. Just fluid. Like that was sexy. Like, no, you know, not like inappropriate sexy, but just like, you know.
We're going to be having a little too much fun on this call. Thank you so much. I'll be trying to practice somebody else.
Okay, you know, listen, your efforts show, and that's what we can do, because you know what? Practice makes progress.
It's the fact that you didn't say perfect for me. Let us commence, because I'm going to love it here.
Yeah, I don't, and that's a whole different, you know, probably episode. I don't use the word perfect, because, like, it's an unattainable, unrealistic goal that they've been instilling, they have been instilling in us since birth that we keep trying to reach, and it's setting everybody up for so many different things. But we're not going to talk about that right now today, but we can integrate it into the conversation.
Stay focused. Let me get it. Okay.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really appreciated about you, and y'all, just so you know, the doctor here reached out on LinkedIn and I was captivated. But one of the things I really appreciated is, even though we talk a lot about the different facets of social work, we don't always hear as many folks in the education space that are really trying to get the word out, even though it's what we do in our practice. So this was really exciting to me, because it's just like, we damn sure ain't talking about so many different things. And I think, and I could be wrong because I am learning about you too, that you probably have a personal connection to some of the work that you're doing as well. Because yeah, a lot of times that really drives our passion, because we know this profession ain't always easy. And, you know, sometimes we have to remind ourselves of our why. So if you don't mind sharing, I would like to hear a little bit about yours.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Yes, I do have a personal connection to the work. And I guess before we get started, I have to do my disclaimer, because most people know me as a military social worker. So because I am an active duty service member, I have to make it very clear and say anything that I say, though I wear all these hats, is not specifically representing or speaking on behalf of the government, the Department of Defense, any particular branch of the military command or installation. Everything belongs to Dr. O and Dr. O alone. Okay, let's continue.
Okay, listen, I'm here for it. And thank you for your service. It is not light work to be a member of any armed services, a family member, or even extended family member. So my hat off to you, because it's not, regardless to whether you are here active duty, serving overseas, you know, I just thought of some other episodes for us in the future, but let's stay on task.
I'm so sorry. I just had to do it. So because of my work and my personal experience, I am a perinatal mental health certified clinician. So that means that I serve populations that experience the perinatal period as a whole. I'm not going to get too caught up with that, because then I'll get distracted. My personal journey is that I am a fellow sister. So I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. I also consider myself an infertility warrior. I am a woman who suffers from infertility, which is the Center for Disease Control defines that as an inability to get pregnant successfully on one's own without medical intervention after a year of trying. So I wear those hats. I have a unique experience where I've also undergone IVF. I have experienced a child loss as well. So I touch almost every aspect of these varying reproductive challenges. So I am very connected and passionate about the work because I'm telling my story and so many other people.
Well, I want to thank you for that, especially because it's not always easy to, start talking to someone you just met and share such detailed nuances of your personal life. But this is something that impacts so many of us. And even those of us who identify as women, it is, one level of specificity, but it doesn't always speak to, what partners and caregivers also kind of go through in this journey. So if we aren't talking about what happens to us as women, we damn sure know that ain't nobody trying to address the things that are coming up for them as well. So I wanted to commend you for that because we don't always share, and I think that also kind of speaks to and because you are looking youthful, so I don't know how long ago you got your doctorate, where you got your master's, but for a long time in schools, they were teaching us about self-disclosure and from the lens of not disclosing. So coming from our deconstructionist, decolonization therapeutic lens, this is really important, impactful work, especially because we work in communities of color.
Listen, and it's important to acknowledge that we're hitting this topic during Black Maternal Health Week. Okay.
Bang!
So, this is a huge deal for us to be touching on this during this particular time because this is when we're making the most noise and we're trying to get people's attention on it. So, yes, you said a mouthful right there because I actually taught social work ethics as an educator. And I loved having the conversation with students about self-disclosure and the importance of decolonizing social work, not just in total, but primarily the ethics. I loved it when students would have this stigma or their perception of what was ethically appropriate based off of assumption, and I was like, listen, if self-disclosure belongs to the client, because the time always belongs to the client, right?
Amen.
If self-disclosure is goal-oriented towards their treatment and progression, then there's nothing wrong with providing it. The problem comes in where self-disclosure is for your own healing. We can't be bleeding on the client, but we'll touch on that later.
Absolute fact. So I'm wondering, because you did touch on a few different areas. How did you get started? How are you like, hey, this is something that is important of value, like we need to talk about it. Like we're gonna get into why we don't, but I'm just wondering, like, how did that organically come up for you?
Oh my word. So I will say that it came up honestly as I was live and in effect in the experience. And please let me apologize in advance. I have a four-legged child who will attempt to create all types of noise because she wants attention. Oh
That
no.
is no problem. I have a three-legged one, my fabulous tripod Fonzie upstairs, and I have to close the door to make sure that he doesn't come down. But I can guarantee you he's laying right on the opposite side of the door, so it's no problem at all.
Thank you so much. I got started in the work live and in effect, honestly. I remember finding out about my diagnosis. I believe when I found out I have PCOS, I was 23, maybe. I might have been a little younger. And alongside that diagnosis, what made it so concerning for me was that I was generally healthy. Young woman. I was military as well during that time, even though I wasn't active duty at the time. And I remember getting off of my birth control because at the time, myself and my ex had gotten married. We were prepared to start a family. We wanted to move forward in family planning. So I got off of my birth control. What many people don't know about PCOS and birth control is that birth control is a means, I guess, of managing most of PCOS's most disrespectful symptoms. Okay, the hair growth, the mustache growth, the balding at the edges, the anxiousness, the depressive symptoms, the body dysmorphia. Within, I want to say, gosh, within 4 months of getting off of my birth control, out of nowhere, I gained over 60 pounds. I became pre-diabetic. I had high blood pressure. I had this protruding belly that looked like I was at least 5 months pregnant. And so myself and my previous partner at the time, we thought, oh, I must be pregnant. Yay. With a string of negative pregnancy tests and no period in sight. So while I'm going through this process, right, thankfully I did graduate with my degree. I was clinically practicing, and I was like, I feel like I am crazy. I don't understand what's going on with me. I don't understand what my body is doing. And I ended up taking a few more months to get diagnosed. Compared to others, I'm lucky. The average time frame for folks to get properly diagnosed with PCOS can take months, if not years, just due to misdiagnosis. So I was very lucky to get diagnosed sooner because I was not in the country at the time. I was seeking medical care outside of the country.
That's probably why. But you know what? We go get there too, 'cause
Listen,
I have a
that's your
few
truth.
anecdotes.
Absolutely. So I remember going repeatedly to the hospital, complaining of my symptoms, and just kind of being informed, hey, you're not pregnant, so come back next month. And I think by the third month, I had finally gotten to a point where I was mentally going left. So, I took a friend's advice. I went to a local doctor who, same day, diagnosed me with PCOS, showed me the buildup of cysts in my ovaries, explained why I was not having a period. I was suffering from anovulation, which means that my eggs that were attempting to build were not building to full capacity. So when they talk about cysts building up, the cysts are actually underdeveloped eggs. So that's what was building up in my ovaries, therefore resulting in no period because no egg was being nurtured and released for pregnancy to even occur. And I remember in that experience saying, good God, like where is my mental health recommendation? Where is my referral? Because this is a lot. And of course, those thoughts continued as I continued throughout the journey. We were so adamant about having a baby that I went through with IVF. We did have a failed egg retrieval. So the first cycle, they didn't retrieve any eggs. They had to double up my medication. So that next cycle, I dropped over 32. So I was on bed rest for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, due to overstimulation. And then I remember we did a frozen embryo transfer. It was successful. I did get pregnant, but I sadly had a silent miscarriage, when I was supposed to be about 15 or 16 weeks along. So I remember learning of the news. My ex at that time was active duty military. He was elsewhere. So I learned of the news on my own. And I remember sitting in the doctor's office, and the way I learned that I had lost my son was, well, yep, there's no heartbeat. Yep, nope, there's no heartbeat. Let me get the doctor. And I remember having that moment of shock, going through that initial grieving moment, denial, this is not happening. And then saying, where is my social worker? And live and in effect in that moment was when I realized we have a space and a place within this work that we're not present because some of us don't know, or we're not present just because we haven't been extended invitation to the table. And I'm working to change that.
I'm basically speechless, but thank you for sharing in such great detail your journey and almost in a time of not And I don't even want to say that you weren't grieving in that moment, but like you had so much to process, and then your brain just went, hey, where's my social work support? Where's the social work support for other individuals in my situation? I think that's kind of also why our brain chemistry as social workers is wired different. But like that really kind of speaks to so many things. Like in no particular order, the probably technician that was doing your ultrasound, like why? Like why are you the one that's like, oh, there's no heartbeat? Like was there no discussion about, you know, if that's news that you are sharing with a pregnant individual, how to do that, or maybe a protocol in the doctor's office, or maybe going to get the. So like that's just one thing. Then even thinking about the fact that medical care outside of the United States looks very different for a variety of different reasons. One of the first thoughts I had when you were sharing that you were diagnosed earlier in your 20s, I was like, shit, you have like the dopest medical provider, because everyone I know, and I grew up in New York City, that had disclosed, whether it's per people in my personal or professional life, that they have a PCOS diagnosis, maybe 28. 32, 36. So it's just something that they had been battling with for so long and didn't even realize had a name. Then on top of that, to speak to what you had shared about birth control, all it does is mask. All it does is mask. Like most of the medications, here I go on my soapbox, I'm gonna keep it brief, but most of the medications that we are provided, even though we know that birth control is basically synthetic hormones, is to mask symptoms. It doesn't get to the root cause. So for many of us that do have these reproductive themes, like I have, you know, shared on this podcast that I have fibroids, I've had them removed, they just keep coming back. Finding out that now I also have endometriosis. Like I'm sure that was something that was hanging out for a long time. And the only reason the doctor knew that is because when he went to go get the fibroids, he saw it. So it's just like we have these things. They're, you know, PCOS. They're, you know, we have these other hormonal disruptors. There's the food we're eating and all of these different things that we haven't been 100% educated on top of the fact that culturally and hereditarily, we also may have things that co-occur within our body that impact this. So unless we're finding out from family members who are on top of these things, and depending on where you grew up, if you have immigrant families or your socioeconomic status or your trauma with the medical health profession, you're not going to have all of this information. So then you have to go it alone. And if you are not individuals like ourselves that, you know, we have been ingratiated into academia and know how to access resources and advocate for ourselves, and even sometimes we don't get the answers we need, what happens to individuals who don't have that type of access or support? So it's no wonder to me how you were able to kind of interweave these things so quickly while also managing your own grief behind all of these efforts that you made. And just real
Yes.
quick, speaking about the IVF process, when you said that you had to do it, baffles my mind because you have to inject synthetic hormones into your body to make it overproduce to prepare alone for the egg retrieval. And that makes you feel, and I'm speaking from experience, y'all. I haven't spoken about this piece of it yet, but it makes you feel crazy. And not just regular crazy, like you really begin to like second and third guess yourself. So imagining what that must feel like, staying on top of all the doctor's appointments, the monitoring, work, your home life, any other responsibilities, because it's so much of a priority for you to follow through with your family planning. You forego all of these things. And then you mentioned bed rest because you didn't have no other choice. And you probably could have stayed on bed rest for another minute because it was such a process. And these are also things that people are talking about. It is taxing, it is so significantly taxing.
So all that being said, imagine my first, and you know, I tell parts of my story. That's not even a whole tea, okay? Because we're not going to talk about how insurance didn't hit the mark.
Yeah,
How,
that might be a whole nother episode too.
listen, we're not going to talk about how insurance hit the mark or how I was re-traumatized sitting in the waiting room with pregnant persons Or how I wasn't considered to be a postpartum mother because I had a miscarriage, but I was actively experiencing postpartum depression and active safety concerns, right? So we're not going to talk about all these different parts, but do you see how many different roles social work could play in a simple scenario like mine? And as scary as it sounds, my scenario is not one of the worst cases I have seen or heard. So I always tell my story and I'm very open and honest about it because I realized I got really lucky. My pain has purpose. So the purpose attached to this is to really pull a call to action to social workers and other mental health professionals and say, so about this table that we need to sit at, and if y'all don't want us to sit there, we're gonna flip it over and create
Bang.
our own. Yes. Just there's so much that I realized in that experience that kind of pushed my trajectory the way that it is. I did complete grad school last year. I noticed you asked, you know. My research was reproductive healthcare challenge and social work education. And while doing this research, there was quite a few things that came up, ironically. There were studies that came up talking about student social work students' perception as it related to a lot of different reproductive themes and topics. And what I found in that work over those years was that social workers are not adequately being exposed to reproductive health care topics and themes in field education. They're not adequately being exposed to the topics in the classroom. They are unfamiliar with the stance that we take as a profession as it relates to these different themes and topics. And because of that, a lot of them utilize their own personal ethics to guide engagement and intervention post grad, right? So, and of course, I know there's a lot of folks that would dare to say, Dr. O, run me the stats. I got you. Okay. I will personally listen, Paula. I'm gonna give you like two or three articles to
Please
cite so
do. We
folks can
like
see it.
resources on this podcast.
Listen, so folks can see it for themselves. This is a thing. So my goal really is always to kind of provide that education about reproductive health care challenge in general, and then to really pull social workers in so they can figure out ways that they can provide support because there are opportunities for employment and change here.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that this is I'm still gonna ask because, and re refresh my memory what state you're in currently.
Oh my goodness, I'm presently in Arizona, but hence my awesome employer, I tend to travel. So I serve social workers all across the country.
Okay. So that's also something, to take into consideration the states that we're in and how they view reproductive rights and accessibility. So that's one lens. Then I'm thinking, of the other lens, even though this is something that impacts us all, thinking about, Black and Brown women, the maternal mortality rate, that's a thing, that is fairly significant. Access to services, depending on where we're living, access to, even though I'm not a fan of insurance, but access to appropriate insurance. So I'm sure these are things that all kind of fall in the scope, but in your opinion, and even thinking of, your recent research, why are these things we're not talking about?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So that again makes me tap dance back into research from my doc program, right? And what I noticed is that within social work is a beautiful profession that always goal oriented towards making a difference. And my definition of social work sometimes is a little expansive. It's so simple that it's expansive compared to others. We simply identify and fill gaps. That's what we do as professional social workers. Regardless of what area of expertise, practice arena, level of knowledge, education, certification, we all identify gaps and provide interventions or ways to support filling those gaps in the case the disciplines or other powers that be are unable or unwilling to do so. So when I looked at why social work might not be looking at reproductive health care, or why some of the topics may be more profound in comparison to others. In social work journals, or a lot of our public, a lot of our research, their topics are kind of biased. The topics are biased more so towards reproductive rights efforts or reproductive justice efforts, and not reproductive health care. Social work also doesn't have a standard foundation for framework that we use to teach reproductive topics, right? So because of that, we kind of lean, right? And because social workers are representatives of the varying aspects of society that we come from, that then creates an environment where reproductive health care is seen similarly to the way the societal lens sees it. And historically, reproductive health care or women's rights wasn't always necessarily seen as something for conversation. It was more so seen as something to control and dictate, right? So with social work, some of the research that I found said that reproductive health care was not really talked about much in social work. Things were skewed more so towards rights efforts and justice efforts. Perception, the perception of the issue here in the US was not as large until the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So social workers didn't perceive it to really be much of a problem, right? In comparison to other areas of the world where we, a lot more research talked about genital mutilation and forced,
Circumcision.
pregnancy. Yeah, talked about a lot of these rights or justice focused topics. And then it also leans into societal expectation or societal norms. So, what is the norm or the expectation for women? And then digging a little deeper, if you start to break it down demographically, what are the societal expectations or even stigmas associated with certain populations? So, since it's Black Maternal Month, for Black and Brown women, Black and Brown women, or even Black men as well, were hypersexualized and still continue to be hypersexualized. So the idea that these populations could suffer from an experience such as endometriosis or PCOS or infertility is difficult to a difficult concept to adjust with, even though statistically, Black women suffer from infertility 2 times the rate than their white counterparts. And they also suffer from postpartum mood and anxiety disorders at a higher rate as well. And so when we think about things like this, it's like, huh, if these numbers are so large, why aren't we paying attention in school? Dissecting social work curriculum, it doesn't have a mandate or a requirement for topics like human sexuality, even though we do prioritize human behavior and social environment. So I think there's a gap as it relates to education and social work, but it's also one that we're hesitant to touch on because, one, the topic has now been politicized, which is scary to say out loud. Our bodies are now political conversations. And outside of that, a lot of people have the perspective that reproductive topics or conversations are more intimate topics to be had at home or private, not necessarily table talk. So all of these things wrapped up in one neat bow is what kind of leads to the conversation being missed on a regular basis in social work classrooms and field education. And if we're not talking about it in field, we're not talking about it in the classroom, social workers are not going to pursue these opportunities post-grad unless they have an experience like myself and it's real personal.
Ooh, you just identified all of that beautifully. And so thank you for that. But it also, thinking about some of the themes that you brought up, a previous guest and a fabulous colleague, she specializes in perinatal mood disorders. And it made me think about the conversation that I had with her, made me think about the fact that, like, in New York City, we have all of these, like, progressive schools of social work. People want to go into medical social work. And it makes me wonder, like, are there any electives, even though I don't think it should be an elective, but like, how are the more progressive programs and progressive places even trying to tackle this? and thinking about, southern states, they do look a little bit differently culturally. Like I can imagine that, and I could be wrong. So anyone listening, please fact check me. Let me know if I'm wrong, because I would love to retract. It may be non-existent just based off of several different things. And the polit the I'm gonna say this wrong. Politics. Pol
This part. You got it. Yeah.
The politis our body's being politicized is very jarring, especially for like our youth, because they haven't been around as long to see what it was before, not also not talked about. The overturning of Roe v. Wade did a lot of things in this country for a lot of people. And I think for the youth particularly, some of them, and I have a younger client, so we had to take time to address some of like what this meant. And some were even embarrassed to say that they didn't really understand what it meant, but they figured, you know what? Like, let me ask somebody who's been around the gravity of like what this means, or folks who are now no longer taking jobs or moving to other states because this is something that can very well come into play for them. So thinking about those individuals not having access to the level of support that we could provide, should this be the avenue that we decide to take our practice into? And not just that in terms of like, the micro practice, like, the one-on-one, for lack of a better term, but for the education and advocacy piece of it that you spoke about, because if we're not talking about it, how's anyone going to know? Like, even thinking about the research that you were able to cultivate, just figuring out the direction of your work, but just identifying all of these data points are here. And I don't know how vast or longitudinal some of these studies were that you found. But just the fact that there's enough of us as members of Black and Brown communities that we should have more representation and more advocacy, but it's just not present.
And I mean, I think the most jarring part for me when I went through the research and just kind of came to a realization was that personal ethics were guiding the interventions or the perceptions that, social work students, soon to be social work professionals had. There was a number of studies, and I don't want to quote incorrectly, right? So I'm not going to say specific numbers. But there were studies that said, students endorsed not being able to support a client with a decision that they did not ethically agree with as it related to reproductive health care. There were studies that said the students, large and in part over 60% had not been exposed to the information, to the knowledge, could not cite the policies or the legislation, but they felt like, they could support a client that was going through that experience. So it was a constant push, right? Things just weren't lining up. And I think that was one of the most concerning things for me, that ethically we weren't aligned as a profession. And these students that would soon become postgraduate professionals and then engage in practice. And the reality is, a lot of people don't think about it, but you come into contact with someone that's navigating the reproductive life cycle every day because it's a girl, it's a boy, or it has the capacity to bring life or not, right? Any of these criteria is aligned with the reproductive life cycle. So it's very important for us as social workers to be aware and familiar not only of human, just comprehensive reproductive health and human sexuality, but also for us to be aware of the legislation and the statistics that are impacting our clients on a day-to-day basis. Miscarriage, the rate is 1 out of every 4 women. That means it's extremely prominent. When you have diagnoses like PCOS or endometriosis, it's much higher. Erectile dysfunction, something that we don't like to talk about because, I know my men folks, they don't want to have that conversation. I feel it, but I want to be an advocate in this moment to say nationwide, 11% of men have this challenge. And if you look at the military, multiply it by 3. What we're talking about, right? So reproductive health care is something that's so important that we really need to all kind of band together and dial in with, because people need support. They're navigating challenges, they're navigating loss, they're navigating, stigma, stereotype, mental health concern. We need anxiety, depression, OCD, the different diagnoses that are directly attached to these experiences. It's mind blowing.
And even po the possibility of co-occurring disorders, because there could have been some other things that were, hanging out prior too. And another thing that kind of came up for me while you were speaking was even thinking about the trans community and the lack of support and services, even more so that they may be that they will not be, wait, did I say that right? That they won't be receiving. Because traditional, let me not say traditional, because I don't even feel like anything's traditional anymore, but services and supports, especially depending on where you live, are in limited access for a variety of different reasons. So now you are a member of the trans community and you're ex is why can't I talk all of a sudden? You are exploring family planning. What does that look like for you? And then to be in situations like these, where unfortunately things are not flowing as we initially would have anticipated, where is the support?
Where is the support? Where are the resources? Who are the stakeholders that can make a difference? And again, that question I asked while I sat in my doctor's office, where is my social worker? And it was so interesting how that thought came very clear to me. I know if a social worker was here, there would have been more empathetic care. I know if a social worker was here, my options would have been more thoroughly explained. I know if a social worker was here, ethical considerations would have been discussed with medical professionals. I know if a social worker was here, someone would have been arguing policy for me to try to make a change for this. I know if a social worker was here. And so the question just came back and it was like, where is my social worker? And that, I think, if every social worker, if nothing else, if you can receive nothing else from what I'm saying, where is my social worker? Is the social worker I needed you?
No, yeah, I do. And you've given me a lot to think about too, because because I thought about some of these things, especially starting in my own journey, thinking about friends, because I'm in kind of in the last wave of mine who have become parents. And even thinking about some of the clientele that I've worked with, and it's just like the access isn't there. And yes, we can do more, but where do we start? Which I wonder, what ideas that you might have, whether it is on the individual level, us as clinicians, social work educators in programs, individuals that are working in politics, law, not law enforcement, wow, legislation. What are some of the things that we can be doing as community members, whether they're, small strokes or even bigger ones, to help contribute to the expansion of the education and advocacy needed to make change?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I say base level, every single social worker, regardless of your license type, your credentials, your degree level, every single social worker should become familiar with their state policies as it relates to reproductive health, right? Just base level. What in your state? What is the gestational age where abortion is no longer legal, right? Just for your state alone, most social workers can't answer that question because they don't know. They've never really considered the idea, right? In your state, who are the local organizations that have active chapters or, resources available for folks that are experiencing reproductive health care challenge, whatever that challenge might be? Postpartum Support International, does your state have a chapter? Do they have an affiliate? ASRM, is there an active presence in your state? Is there any certified perinatal mental health providers in your state? If so, how many of them are people of color? Because we have to consider cultural humility and sensitivity, even when we talk about subsections of a population. So reproductive healthcare challenge is big, but there's a number of different subsections. The person that's experiencing infertility may warrant some different resources and support than the person who just experienced a traumatic child loss, right? They may warrant some different resources, support, or experience. So it's important to know what those things are at the very base level. The next step up is really encouraging social work educators consider partnering with different organizations to provide unique field opportunities, right?
Oh, that's
Excuse
a
my
good
four-legged
one.
child, cutting up actively, right? But give me one second. I'm so sorry.
No problem.
I apologize. So, considering different opportunities for field engagement for social work students, especially at the master's level, are they able to be interns at a hospital working on the NICU or, postpartum ward? Are they able to provide clinical services under a licensed social worker who's supervising and has the PMHC at a fertility clinic or a women's health center? What about, male social workers that are interested in providing supports to men? They need services as well. What about sex education-based organizations? Is that something that social workers can enter internship with? For those that teach the introductory social work courses or your HIPSI courses, consider the components associated with the reproductive lifespan during those appropriate developmental time frames for adults. How does reproductive health weave into the adolescent and young adult experience as well as the older adult
Listen.
like what does that look like? So in both field education and the classroom, consider starting to integrate some of these topics. If you're not comfortable talking about it, consider why you're not comfortable. Is this because of an individual perceived notion, or is this related to the profession? Right? Because oftentimes countertransference happens to the best of us, regardless of what environment we're in. So that weird feeling that you're having about, I don't know if that's appropriate to talk about, ask yourself why, curiously. Not to condemn or point fingers at you in any way, but this may be a part of the healing process that the profession needs so we can start touching these topics. Consider inviting folks like myself to come talk. If you're not willing to do it, or if you're not able, you don't have the capacity, your caseload is full because you're teaching a bunch of classes. I feel it. There's a bunch of me's out there that are willing to come and provide a guest lecture for you or, work, collaborate with you or other institutions to do a seminar. Postgraduates, okay, consider the perinatal mental health certification available through PSI. This is an actual thing. It's just like the clinical exam. There is a time period for working with the populations, courses that you have to take in order to meet requirements to take the exam. And then there is an exam to get licensed as a provider who's perinatal experience. So consider taking some continuing education. Even if you're not going to pursue the certification, consider raising your awareness and expanding your knowledge. Remember, social worker, you're a lifetime learner. You committed to that when you got that BSW, MSW. So don't tell me you don't want to. It's okay to say this is my work, but per our code of ethics,
No, definitely. You brought up so many realistic, tangible, possible solutions on so many different levels that we all can access. And I was just thinking about, when I go through this episode again, like I literally want to write them down because like I feel like it makes sense also for us to kind of identify where we are in this process. I mean, personally, I would kind of like tap in what comes up for me because, like, I know as, a person that has ADHD and has anxiety, it's just like I would want to be as best prepared as possible. But I also know that, like, let's say I've had like a consultation with someone, I'm like, you know what? Unfortunately, this is not my wheelhouse. I don't want to say, hey, yes, I can best support you. I can, partner with you on this healing journey. Yeah, I could do it, but there is someone else that's better suited that has that additional training that you mentioned, that has that credentials that focuses or specializes in perinatal, postpartum, like all of these different things. And I think that's a piece of it too, because some of us in these professions, we feel like because we are centered and focused and we have all of this experience, we can help any and everyone. There's a reason that so many of us have a specialty. And there's a reason that we are drawn to the work that we do. So I think that it behooves, which a word I love to use, I think it behooves all of us to kind of say, hey, if I don't have the bandwidth to try to figure out who's the best fit, because I have a lot going on, like maybe we could reach out to somebody that can help us. I'm just saying. And the education piece is
Absolutely.
so important. There may not be that many of us. So, like, I'm glad again that you found me so we could have this conversation. But now I feel like I'm going to keep my ears open for other opportunities and other individuals that kind of like do this work, because like we need networks. We need to be able to say, hey, you know what? I know Dr. O is currently in Arizona, but she has information that could help you being here in New York. Or I know, you know what I'm saying? Like a big part of this for me and just hearing you speak is like the connection, not just the connecting the ideas, connecting possible resources, connecting efforts for advocacy and education, but just like connecting like the basic emotions that kind of come up with this, whether they're emotions of frustration, anger, excitement, ambivalence. So like, you know, because there's so many things that can come up. So like, yeah, it gave me a burst of energy. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, and I tell folks this is one of those talks or one of those conversations topics that most kind of shy away from because, again, it can be emotionally fueled. And I get it because I surely navigated it. Okay. Grief is ghetto, growth is ghetto, and life is ghetto. Adulthood is
Yes.
good. I ever lived it. Okay. So I get it. And I think I just found a way to allow my experience to be something that is more of a motivator in comparison to one of those tough stories. Is it one of those tough stories? Absolutely. I wish my son was here. He would actually be, I want to say, ooh, five. But, you know, look at how many things get to be birthed versus his presence. I'm a part of birthing a movement, and I think that's something that's extremely beautiful. And you was talking about all them organizations. Don't think I ain't got you, okay? There's an organization called
Awesome.
Selene,
Okay.
Selene in New York that is known for this work.
Well, you
They
educated me because this is the first I'm hearing of it. So we're gonna make sure all of this is in the show notes for y'all people listening.
I will make sure to give you the link. Selene is available in New York. Postpartum Support International is a national organization that actually operates in the US, Canada, South America, and other territories. And almost every state has a PSI chapter. So if, you know, you need support as it relates to whether you're the client yourself, right? You want your own support. Or if you're trying to figure out a referral source for a client, they have the PSI PMHC directory, which is where you can legit look up providers. And it's not just meant, you know, therapists like myself. You have pharmacists that are PMHCs, psychiatrists that are PMHCs. You have a pelvic floor therapists that are PMHCs.
And those are
There are
in demand.
doulas, midwives, all of us have partnered together because we realize nurses, we've all partnered together because we realize how important this is. So you can go online and actually look up certified professionals in your local area or wherever your clients are so you can refer them to those folks. And PSI is very progressive. They also have an organization called Perinatal Mental Health Alliance for People of Color. And they focus on the experience of BIPOC communities, Black, Brown, Indigenous, all of us. So it's a beautiful thing. There are resources available and out there. Just got to get connected to them. That's it.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you. And also, I know that we tackled a lot, but I'm just wondering, as we begin to wind down, are there any additional thoughts, ideas that you would like to share with the community before we wrap up?
Oh my goodness. As it relates to this particular topic, just, move in a space of curiosity. My method is AXI 3. That's the way I train most folks to consider reproductive health care challenge. The first thing I need you to do is advocate. But in order to advocate, I need you to be curious. I need you to be competent. I need you to consult, because those three C's are going to make you a change agent. That C3X, that C3, or aspect. And then after you're a change agent, you have the ability to consult with or consult for others and offer training. So AXI 3, give yourself the opportunity to engage in that. You don't have to be the social worker that provides one-to-one service with someone that had an experience like mine. Sometimes being an advocate, being an ally, that is enough.
Maybe you didn't notice, but I could talk to Dr. O for hours. And one of the things I really loved about this podcast is she covers all facets, not just from personal experience, how we close the gap, the logistics of how we do it. She's continuing to do amazing things in this field, and I'm here for all of it. As always, follow us on Instagram at Why Don't We Talk About This Pod, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any and everywhere you get your podcasts. Until next time. The Why Don't We Talk About This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only and is not a substitute for mental health care. It is hosted by me, Paula McMillan Perez, and is produced by Fonzie Tri Media.